What is up, movie friends? Welcome back to Raiders of the Lost Podcast in another episode of Letterboxd Recap, where we go through the movies we've been watching this past week, as well as rating the Letterboxd top 4 of 5 listeners and just, you know, shooting the shit. Shoot that shit, man.
What's up, everybody? I just found out like an hour ago that Roadhouse came out on Amazon.
Today, yeah, March 21st.
It's just so sad because I want to see this movie in theaters. It looks awesome, and it's just on Amazon now. It's like, yeah, go see it if you want. I don't know. It's just there's no marketing for it.
That's the thing with Amazon. They're gonna put it on the banner on the homepage for the next couple of months. You'll see Roadhouse right there with a couple of their other new releases like Ricky Stenicki and a couple of recent ones as well. That's basically the marketing campaign outside of a couple of trailers. I did think they did the one red carpet.
It's
one red carpet.
Yeah, but it wasn't a big one. Wasn't like a world premiere. I'm just really disappointed.
Yeah, and I think that the movie looks like a lot of fun. I want to try and watch it tonight or tomorrow. We are doing a Discord watch party tonight of Ricky Stenicki at the request of a bunch of our listeners. And I just want to watch like a silly, dumb, raunchy comedy. I think it'd be super fun to watch
that.
Yeah,
I think that's going to be fun.
And we could just like have fun chatting the whole time. But Roadhouse, I want to definitely watch soon. And it's weird to not even have any theatrical release whatsoever for Roadhouse. We talked about this a couple of times the last month when news broke of that. And the thing with that is maybe a film like this wouldn't get the reception it might get theatrically because it's getting pretty lukewarm response from fans right now. I'm looking on Letterboxd right now and IMDb. It's getting just pretty mid-tier
ratings. On Roadhouse?
Roadhouse, yeah.
Okay.
A lot of people are giving it three and a half. So it doesn't look like it's going to hit as impactfully as they were hoping for. And maybe it would have landed a better punch.
Wow.
If it was released in theaters. But it's hard.
3.0?
Yeah, it's getting pretty middling response.
I don't know. I feel like it's probably gonna be better than that.
We'll see.
This review right here. I thought Roadhouse was dreadful. Never really understands the B movie formula. It's trying to replicate some questionable casting, nauseating visual language, and a laughably overwrought screenplay. Even Jake Gyllenhaal is struggling to find a tonal through line.
We'll see.
But then 4.5 stars, the perfect action flick from somebody else does all and delivers on every level. Jake is a star and you can't take your eyes off him.
Well, we know that's true. we'll see.
I bet it's good.
Yeah, I'm walking into it open-minded. I want to watch it tonight or maybe tomorrow night.
Yeah, so. I don't think we... probably not have time tonight.
I would love to see it in a theater, but there's no way to do that. Unless you're invited to the red carpet.
Or you just rent out a theater and just play your own movie.
Not worth the price.
Costs like several thousand.
Not worth the price. But yeah, that's the way it is, man.
Such a bummer because it's probably a cool movie. Would have been a cool theater experience. And then people are probably, they're watching with their phones open, so you're not going to enjoy it as much as you would.
It's a challenge for anybody to watch a movie at home without pulling out their phone. Even for me, it's a challenge. And for you, I'm sure it's a challenge. It's just difficult. And I saw someone made a great comment in one of our clips last week, and someone called a film very boring and I couldn't get into it. And they couldn't get into it. And then someone else replied, it's like, try watching a movie with your phone off because every film has its own rhythm and its own pace. And there's no way to get into a film if your phone's next to you or if, you know, someone in the house walks by, starts cooking or whatever. Like all the things that happen inside of a home.
Like Juno puked on your dresser.
Like, he puked everywhere today.
That happens while you're watching a movie.
Anything that takes you out of the film, it's taking you out of that immersion. And so it's difficult for all of us, everybody. No one's excluded from this to completely focus on a film at home. And that's an absolute truth and an absolute certainty. And when you're in a theater, it's different. You are beholden to the film. That's the film is in charge, and it has the power. And unless you're a fucking asshole, you don't pull out your phone, and you don't even think about what's going on in the world. You just sit in there, and you're immersed in the screen, and you just take on this story and let it unfold before you. And because there's this respect for the environment and for other people, the consideration for other people, unless you're a fucking asshole, like I said earlier, and you like to pull out your phone, but the majority of people, they respect that. And it allows you to really take in the film. And I think there are films that could play really well in a theater, but not play well at home. I think this could be an example of that.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
That's a good point. Especially if you're just looking away for a few seconds, you miss some cool stuff. You miss some cool stuff.
And just takes away your concentration from the film.
Plus, I mean, seeing Jake on a big screen is way better than Jake on a small screen.
Yeah. I know you're throwing that on your projector.
Maybe. And, yeah. I might watch it on the TV because it's 4K TV.
It's a great TV.
Yeah.
I just watched awesome Top Gun Maverick on it, and it looked great and sounded great.
Yeah, it's an awesome. Yeah, it's
yeah. Phenomenal.
We got that TV from Hisense.
Hisense.
Yeah, Hisense. Thanks, Hisense. I love that TV. It's great. But the projector's awesome. It's not.
Michael Scott reference. I love that TV. It's a plasma. 14-inch.
15-inch.
15-inch.
And ready? You want a little more space in the room? Boom. Folds in. Just like that.
I love that TV.
Sick reference, bro. References are out of control.
But yeah, so those are going to be our two first watches this week is Ricky Stenicki in Roadhouse. Ricky Stenicki looks just like the dumb, stupid fun. I haven't seen a movie like that in a while since No Hard Feelings.
Yeah, the raunchy comedy, maybe it can come back, maybe it can't. I think
it can make
a
comeback.
The Jennifer Lawrence movie was really funny. Mm-hmm. I had a good time with that one.
I'm down to watch Zac Efron and John Cena just do their thing. You know, I love both of them. They're great.
All right, let's get into our first watch of the week, which I think for us was
yes.
Godzilla X Kong, the new Empire, which we are still under embargo for. We cannot review the movie. We can't really talk about anything specific, but we can say that we had a terrific time because it was an awesome experience at IMAX HQ. We got to get some background on the film from the director, Adam Wingard. He was there. They had sort of a war room set up from what it was sort of like on set in mm-hmm. terms of seeing some pre-visualizations of the project, some stills, some pre-vis art. Sort of some props, which was really cool, as well as some of the programming of how they create visual effects, which was awesome.
Yeah, it was great.
It was a great event. We met some cool people, saw some friends, and it was a great experience. It's a movie that you should see on the big screen. It's the first in the MonsterVerse that was shot entirely for the IMAX format on IMAX cameras.
Mm-hmm.
Shot on film as well. It looked really great. It was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it, but definitely check it on theaters. It comes out in like a week.
March 29th.
March 29th. Yes. So we can't talk about it yet, but we did have an incredible time.
And we actually recorded an episode with another person on YouTube who's an expert, Marquez. He's an expert on the MonsterVerse. So we had a great chat with him. And overall, not talking about the film, the night was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. It was really great and really terrific experience. And one of my favorite screenings to go to because there was a great food spread. Oh my God. There's so much prosciutto, so much cheese.
I was starving.
So many Italian meats. They had everything. And then they had great steak sandwiches and they had little noodles. And there's so much stuff. And then we were putting down that wine.
Yeah.
Put down a couple glasses.
It was a good time. It's the most we've ever got to experience in terms of like a hands-on interview with a director where they just took us into the room. And he just like talked us through, phony of us through a bunch of stuff. It was awesome.
First time we went to, it was a press event. Yeah. It was mostly journalists there and then a couple of podcasters like us. Mm-hmm. And then it was cool to see that kind of event we hadn't been to yet. But overall, it was a really fun experience.
Yeah, so we can't give it a rating. We can't review it. We can't do anything like that. But we can say that you'll have a good time.
I gave it a heart on Letterboxd. And you freaked out. You're like, oh my God, did you give it a 1-star review? I was like, no, I just liked it.
I don't think I was wearing my glasses. And I was like,
you're like, oh, we can't review it.
I'm like, wait, first of all, you gave it 1-star? What?
No,
I'm like, Anthony, I just liked it.
I just liked it. Just so people know that we watched it. you had a little mini panic.
I'm not great at Letterboxd.
You're learning. But my first actual watch of the week was Baby Driver. And I wrote, God, I wish they made another one. Gave it 4.5 stars. And we watched this on Discord with a bunch of the listeners because it was Donnie's birthday and it's his favorite movie. And we watched, and you were out. You already had plans.
Yeah, I was already out.
You couldn't join us. But we had a blast. We were just watching Baby Driver and chatting the whole time. And it was a really fun night. I haven't seen the film in a couple of years. And just great fun time, great music, great action, terrific tone. Excellent cast. Everybody's so good in that movie. And it's just overall a really fun, entertaining action flick. And it's got some fantastic car chases. I love that film. It's one of Edgar Wright's best. And I think it's unfortunate they never were able to make a second one because it could have been really great. But it is a lot of fun. And I think Jon Hamm delivers one of my favorite performances of his. Maybe except for Don Draper, it might be his best role as Buddy.
Yeah, it's great. And you guys were all wearing headphones, I'm assuming.
Yes.
So it must have been a cool experience to watch. I've never watched that movie with headphones because if you wear it with headphones, you get the left-right channel swaps for when he's listening to specific songs and specific music. Because if he takes his earbud out, then you'll have the music only playing in the left ear. Or if he takes out his left earbud, you only hear music in the right earbud.
Oh, that's cool.
You can get that watching it on your TV in a theater, but you don't pick up on it as well as if you're wearing headphones.
I was doing a little bit of both, so I didn't quite pick up on it. Plus, I was in the car for the first 20 minutes driving home. I was listening. I wasn't watching, but I was just voice call in the Discord. Then when I got home, I was watching it. I was not watching it while driving. That's
dangerous. I did not watch it.
What was your first watch this week?
Well, we get into our Letterboxd.
Oh yeah, let's get
into
that.
We already did our first watch. Let's get in there. You skipped ahead. You got to do our fans.
I just wanted to talk about a movie though.
Yeah.
Also, happy belated birthday to Donnie, our pal.
Happy birthday, Donnie.
Now, first up, we got a pair of brothers over here. The Flanagan boys. We got Cam and Adam Flanagan over here.
Flanagans.
The Flanagans.
Such an Irish name.
They have great picks for the top four. So first up, we'll go with Adam, who has There Will Be Blood. Great pick, bud. It's my personal favorite. On Sunday from Denis Villeneuve.
Well, I'm glad people are starting to watch that movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's getting a lot of love. People started watching Dune as well. Dune Part 1.
Like I said, acting like they've all been here. They've all been Dune. Apparently, everyone's been a Dune stan this whole time.
2001 Space Odyssey. Great fucking pick. And then The Hunt. Excellent film from the director of I don't know why. I can't remember the name of this. The one where he drinks a lot.
Another round.
Sorry. Thomas something. And then Mads Mikkelsen stars in The Hunt, and it's just one of the most tragic films I've ever seen in my entire life. It's incredible.
Hold on. I just got some cool news.
You got cool news.
So David Fincher has made an IMAX restoration of Seven.
No fucking way.
So
what?
I'm assuming that there's going to be an announcement this year that you'll be able to see Seven in IMAX.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
What's in the box?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. One of my all-time faves. I've never seen it in a theater.
Me neither. I mean, yeah, because we were kids when it came out. So that would be a visceral experience because movie is just so raw and intense. But seeing it on that big of a screen with that good sound design, holy crap.
Honestly, Seven is my pick for Fincher's best film and best looking film.
I think it's his best movie, too.
Yeah.
It's not my favorite Fincher movie. It's probably Fight Club's my favorite movie. Yeah. But I think Seven probably is his best
Seven movie. Is just a special movie, man. It's just
absurd because it's his second film.
Yeah, it's just lightning striking, and he was the right director for the right story, and oh my God, his direction of that movie is just expert and perfect. Everything about, like, it's one of my most watched movies, and it's a disturbing movie, but when I watch it, because I'm desensitized to it because I've seen it so many times, so the gnarly stuff doesn't really affect me, but I'm just, like, always enraptured and entranced and blown away by the visual dynamism of that film. It's really an incredible visceral experience. So I am gonna be there once it opens in IMAX. I'll be there. Fuck yes, let's fucking go.
It's gonna be intense. Sorry, so we can get back into Letterboxd.
The Flanagan boys, Adam, recently watched Zone of Interest, American Fiction, Anatomy of a Fall, and Black Hawk Down. Nice stuff, man. Nice stuff. Caught up on 2023. Also a great Ridley Scott film.
Mm-hmm.
Next up, we got the other Flanagan boy, Cam.
Cam, what's Flanagan. What's up, Cam? Cam Flanagan.
These Australian kids. Cam's from Melbourne. I'm guessing Adam's from Melbourne, too.
Oh, they're Aussies. All right.
Little Aussies.
That's great.
All right. Cam's got... He also has 2001 Space Odyssey.
Hell yeah.
Loving it. Then we got Midsummer.
Mm-hmm.
Trainspotting.
Oh, yeah.
We haven't seen that one in a couple of times.
One of the hotels I stayed at in Edinburgh, on the wall, they had framed images of pages of that screenplay.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow, they must have shot it there.
No, it's because it's Scotland.
Oh, okay.
It's just a hotel.
Well, maybe they shot a scene there.
No, it was like the Indigo Hotel. They didn't shoot a scene there. It's just Scotland, Anthony.
It's
like what they're very famous for is Trainspotting.
I know Trainspotting is Scotland, motherfucker.
They didn't film.
I'm just saying, maybe they filmed a shot there.
They did not film a shot there.
Did you talk to the management?
I didn't have to because it's the Indigo Hotel. It's just decor.
Did you talk to the management?
No, I didn't have to.
So you didn't for sure
it's
find
literally
out. So you're speaking of something you don't know about.
I know.
You know? How?
It's a fucking hotel room next to the Waverley train station
in
Edinburgh.
They could have shot something there.
They did not shoot something there.
Why not?
There's no fucking way. First of all, it's a terrible place to shoot a movie because it's so fucking noisy.
Yeah, well, this was 25 years ago, man.
They did not shoot a scene from Trainspotting. It's just decor.
I'm just saying, you don't know.
I guarantee every single...
Are you Danny Boyle?
I guarantee every room in that hotel has framed photos of Trainspotting screenplay.
Well, maybe it was redone recently, but it was a shooting location.
They did not shoot Trainspotting there.
Hold on, let me just Google it.
Go for it.
Trainspotting, the entirety of Trainspotting was shot in the Indigo Hotel in Edinburgh. Wow.
You're ridiculous.
And... Cam, sorry. Cam's fourth film on his top four is Punch Drunk Love. Great pick.
Thanks, Cam.
Which was also shot in the Indigo Hotel in Edinburgh.
Fucking motherfucker.
All right, the Flanagans. We got them.
We got the Flans.
We got the Flanagans. All right, next up, we have our boy Joe. Now, Joe has a great top four as well. All the way New York guy with Willem Dafoe as his profile photo. That's great. We have Stand By Me.
Great pick.
Also, I'm just saying, Joe, great poster selections. Hateful Eight.
Amazing. Amazing.
This is a good one. So the Hateful Eight logo is in blood and snow. That's awesome.
That's great.
And then No Country. Fucking fantastic. No Men for Old Country.
No Men for Old Country.
See that Brolin video with Javier? Uh-huh. They're on set of Dune 2, and he goes, "Hey, you might know us from No Men from Old Country, the most fucked up movie title ever." People mess it up all the time, he says, when he talks to people. And then Raging Bull. Fuck yeah, bro.
Hell yeah.
Joe's crushing it. Recently watched Midnight Cowboy, The African Queen, Argo Fuck Yourself, and Inception.
I go fuck yourself.
I haven't seen Midnight Cowboy in a while. That's a great movie.
It is a good one.
Yeah. Fucking A, man. Great film. All right, next up, we have, one moment while I pull it up, we have another Joe. Joe Emerson this time.
Joe Emerson.
Joe has a great bio. Can't think of a funny original quote to go here. I'm just on here to log films. Hey, I like the honesty. I like it.
Simple man.
First up, we have Labyrinth with Bowie. Pulp Fiction.
Hell yeah.
The Departed guy.
The Departed!
And we in the office, baby.
Training Day.
Fucking great.
What a great
pick.
List.
I remember watching Training Day as a kid because our brothers would put it on.
That's a film boy list right there.
That is a film boy list. Film boys!
Film boys. All y'all are film boys.
Training
film
Day
girls.
Is just, oh my God. It's just, what a movie, man. What a fucking movie,
what
Training
a picture.
Day. What a picture. Oh my God. I'm going to, what is its letterbox rating? It's
probably
over
like
four.
A 3.8.
It's a 4.0.
That's
okay, whatever.
I'll take a 4.0.
Yeah, that's fine. It's really a 4.6, though. It should be.
Whoa, I don't know if it's a 4.6.
4.5.
Like 4.2?
Okay, 4.2.
4.2,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, 4.6 is higher carry territory.
Yeah, dude, like, relax over there. All
right, 4.2. Wonderful movie. Man, what a movie.
Yeah, we get it. We get you like Training
when
Day.
When Denzel won his Oscar, he thanked Antoine, and the Academy put Antoine Fuqua in a table way in the back of the Academy.
That's sad.
And he's like, I don't know where he is. He's somewhere way in the back. But my young director, Antoine Fuqua, thank you. And it was just like, dude, how is he not sitting near the front? Man, it's crazy. Recently, Joe has watched Social Network, Tenet, Bobby, and Everything Everywhere All at Once. Great stuff. Then we got up next, Elise. What's up, Elise? Ooh, these are great picks. 500 Days of Summer.
Hell yeah.
The Theory of Everything.
Ooh.
Great movie.
Good pick.
Great movie. Fight Club.
Let's go, Elise.
Film Girl.
Film Girl. Film Girl.
And then Bolt. Film Girl.
Film Girl.
Film Girl.
That's a Film Girl list if I've heard it.
Fuck yeah. And then recently, she watched 500 Days of Summer, To the Bone, which is the Lily Collins movie, Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, and then Love Actually.
Film Girls.
Film Girls. Film Girl. Thank you, Elise.
Thanks for sending that
in. Yeah, thanks for sending that in. And our final top four for today is from Noah Burke. What's up, Noah? We got Into the Wild.
Great pick.
Boyhood.
Great pick.
The Place Beyond the Pines.
Oh, I'm...
Film Boy.
Someone's a coming-of-age fan.
Film boy. And then In Bruges.
In fucking Bruges.
Fucking Bruges.
Fucking Bruges.
It's fucking
like
Bruges.
It's like a fucking fairy tale. Is he enjoying himself?
Yeah.
It's like a fucking fairy tale.
Oh, my God. Ralph Fiennes in that movie is unbelievable. He's so good. That's a great list. I like that list.
Me too.
And then recently.
I think you would like Kings of Summer if you've never seen it, by the way, pal.
Yeah, Noah, Kings of Summer is a great movie. Great coming of age movie.
Seems like your vibe.
Yeah. And then recently, Noah's watched Ready or Not, Dodgeball.
I read it.
In a book.
It actually happened, you know. It's taking the bull by the horns.
Are you reading the dictionary?
I like to break a mental sweat, too.
Maybe we should mate sometime. I think we should mate.
Date.
I mean, date. Gone Girl. And then Fight Club. Film Boy.
Back-to-back Finchers.
Love it. Thank you to everybody for sending in your Letterboxd top fours. If you'd like to have your Letterboxd top four read out on the show, all you got to do is screenshot it and DM it to us on that gram, and then we will say it out here.
The gram, kid.
The gram.
The gram. All right, let's get back into what we've been watching. For me, my next watch was an early screening for Immaculate. This is the new film starring Sydney Sweeney. It's a horror film directed by Michael Mohan. Michael Mohan's also made Save the Date, as well as One Too Many Mornings and Pink Grapefruit and The Voyeurs. He worked with, yeah, The Voyeurs is the movie, the last movie he made with Sydney Sweeney.
Smith, yeah.
Justice Smith back in 2021. Never saw that. So Immaculate, it was a cool experience. We went to see this film, early screening, thanks to Neon, and it was in a church. It was a church in Hollywood, which is really cool, an active church, and they decked it out with creepy people everywhere, red lighting and candles.
Yeah.
Really good production design for the screening.
Very theatrical.
Yeah, Sydney Sweeney was there. She introduced the film.
There was a singer.
Yeah, there was one of the singers who did some of the vocals for the music. She sang a little opera piece, and then the director came out and introduced the film, and then Sydney Sweeney came out and brought the house down. Everyone freaked out. She was there for like a minute, and then she left, and it was really cool to see, you know, Sydney Sweeney and the director there, which was really nice. And the film, we were sitting in pews. I didn't think we were sitting in pews, but we were sitting in pews. But it was fine.
It was fine.
They had cushions. It was comfortable enough.
Popcorn was great.
The popcorn was excellent. It's just after a while, you need something to like pews aren't very comfortable for after like 30 minutes. You kind of need to like lean forwards or
lots of scooting.
It's
or
not great
around.
Posture for your posture. But I get it. It was cool. It was in a church. It was part of the vibe. This movie I gave 3 stars. And I think it's really well made. And there are a lot of elements I liked. And it's, to an extent, got a very unique concept. Not the Immaculate Conception part, because this movie, for me, my review, I'll read it out loud.
Go ahead. What'd you give it for rating again?
3.
3?
It's good, but the film is trying too hard to capture popular motifs in recent entertainment rather than do its own thing. It's trying to be Squid Games, Ready or Not, and Rosemary's Baby all at once. Would have worked much better focusing on its main strength of a unique concept. Gorgeous visuals and locations and cinematography, though. This movie was shot in Italy, and they had a fantastic location, this massive amount. It looked like
an estate.
I think it was the seat, one of the locations for Godfather Part 3 when he's talking to the Cardinal. Michael's talking to the Cardinal. Really beautiful, massive building, beautiful interiors, beautiful churches. So it looks terrific. It really does. But I just think it's trying too hard to capture things that are popular right now, which of course you want to do. It makes your movie marketable and fans connect with it if they like other things. But I think its great strength was this unique idea and this unique twist on Immaculate Conception. That's not a spoiler because the movie's called Immaculate. But I think it leaned too much into Squid Games feel and then Ready or Not feel. And I think that took away from the movie and what it could have been. But overall, I thought it was pretty solid. If you can't really handle very scary movies, this one will be okay for you. It's not very scary. It's mostly just jump scares. It's pretty gross at times. A couple scenes of like, like cringing, like, I can't watch at the screen anymore, which is cool. I like that. But overall, it was solid. And Sydney Sweeney's great. She's a star, clearly. She's, you know, you can't take your eyes off her on
You think
screen.
She's great?
I think she's
at acting?
Yeah, I think she's solid. She's a star. Mm-hmm. She's a star. She's got it.
I actually disagree with you.
Whoa.
I'm not sold on Sydney Sweeney, especially after this movie. I think that her acting was pretty wooden. And outside of, she can scream and she can cry. But when she's not doing that, she honestly just sounded like Sydney Sweeney. And it took me out of it. And it didn't feel like she was a character. And so I was actually, this is the first real thing I've seen her acting in. I've not watched Euphoria. I've not watched anything else she's been in. So this is my first real experience with her as an audience, watching her act. And I was, she's good. She's good. But I just was not impressed with her. And I'm not sure she was the right role for the right character actress for this, even though she produced the film. I did not like the film. I gave it 2.5 stars. And here's my review. Pretty on the outside, lacking on the inside. A heavy reliance on unnecessary jump scares and plot holes took me out of the picture, and the story turned out to be a bit ridiculous instead of horrific. Sweeney is good but not quite great, although she certainly did commit to the role. And so the production had some really good elements, looked good. The music was very good as well. But again, and like you said, just jump scares for jump scares' sake, and so it wasn't quite a horror movie like I was expecting to walk into.
I enjoyed the ending, though. I like the ending. But yeah, it's just not too much of the substance was there. But yeah. It's solid. I think people will like it.
I think it'll do really well.
Yeah, me too.
I think it'll do really well.
I think it'll do fine.
So my next watch, I watched quite a few films this week. My next watch was a Western. I finished out the trilogy with The Man with No Name for a few dollars more. And then I spoke about this in our episode.
Yeah, because you watched them out of order.
Yeah, in our 20 best Westerns of all time. I gave it 5 stars, and I wrote, it's as if Sergio Leone and Clint Eastwood made 2 great Westerns and then cracked the code to finally make one of the greatest films ever right after this, and I'm talking about, of course, The Good, the Bad, the Ugly being one of the greatest films ever, and for a few dollars more, absolutely incredible, all-time Western, so much fun, incredible villain. It's one of my favorite villains I've ever seen in a Western, El Indio. He's terrific, and it just really adds a lot of stakes to the film that the other two in the trilogy don't quite have. I think this has the superior villain. But overall, The Good and Bad and the Ugly is just an incredible experience of a film. But for a few dollars more, it's entertaining. It's charming. Great shootouts. Really cool story. It's got a bank robbery. That's a lot of fun. And just, you know, you have these two heroes, these two protagonists, and they think they know what's up, but then they just keep getting it handed to them. And so they do a great job of making sure that nothing's very easy for them to overcome. And it's just really terrific, excellent conflicts, and a beautiful cinematography and music, as you would come to expect from Sergio Leone's team on Spaghetti Western. It's a terrific film. Loved it.
Hell yeah. What else did you watch?
Then I watched Birth, which is a Jonathan Glazer film. It was the second film he made, starring Nicole Kidman and Danny Houston. Now, this is a film I've been meaning to watch forever, and I finally did it because it's on Criterion Channel. It's an interesting movie. It's also very weird. So it's Nicole Kidman plays a woman. She's a widow of 10 years. Her husband 10 years ago died, surprisingly, while on a run. He had like a heart attack. He's very, very young and in good shape, so no one was expecting it. And the film takes place 10 years later. She's remarried. She has a new fiance. She's moved on somewhat. And no, she's built a new life after her husband's death. However, a young boy, a 10-year-old boy, arrives at their doorstep saying that he is the reincarnation of her dead husband. Somehow he knows all this very specific knowledge about her husband. She knows about their relationship. She knows about the family. He can name all the members of the family and specific things about them. Just very odd, and nobody can really find a way of explaining it. And at first, everybody is against it. Like, this kid's, he's just a kid messing with us. But as time goes on, they spend more time with them. It's like, how does this little boy know so much about us and about her and about them? And it really makes them all question, is this really a reincarnation of the dead husband? It could be. And then that puts a strife through some of the family. It makes it very awkward for her fiancé, played by Danny Houston, who's like, why are you hanging out with this boy so much who claims to be your dead husband? Jonathan Glazer is a really terrific director. He made The Zone of Interest this year. He's only made 4 features, but they're all very different from one another. They're all very unique in their tone, and they're all visually incredible. He's a very visual director, a very simple camera work, but everything's framed perfectly. Everything's lit perfectly. And nothing's overused, and he's a great tonal balance to his editing and his pacing of his films. And I also respect anyone who writes their own movies. It's such a hard thing to do and to pull it off really well. I will say the movie, it does take a little bit too weird of a turn. It does not quite stick the landing. However, I still gave it 4 stars. I think it's fantastic for what it is, and it's a really interesting movie. It's not for the faint of heart. It's an awkward thing to walk into, like this woman's like questioning, am I in love with this 10-year-old boy because I think it's my dead husband. So some weird stuff happens, nothing gratuitous, but there's some awkward situations that most audiences might be turned off by. But if you can withstand that, it's an interesting watch and an interesting story.
I actually saw a clip of that film like a week ago on like Instagram, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the scene where the boy comes over for like the first time through the door, and she's like, "Who are you?" This lost little boy, and mm-hmm. he tries to tell her like, "I'm your husband." She's like, "Get the fuck out!" Like,
yeah,
out. She's like, "This is crazy."
She's like, "You're trying to tell me you're my husband?"
Yeah,
she's like, "Get the hell out!"
It looked really interesting.
It's a cool watch. It's a cool watch. Great opening shot, and oh, it's got one of the most striking and impactful final scenes I've ever seen in recent memory. It was like. The ending is really what made me give it 4 stars. It's just this great long take, and I was shook after it. Like, the credits were rolling, and I was just sitting in my bed. I was like, holy shit, that was intense. Like, that was – and Nicole Kidman, like always, absolutely fucking crushes it because she's just an all-timer.
Yeah, she's a goat. She's a goat.
Man. All right, what do you got next?
I have 2 more movies left.
Nice.
I have The King.
Oh, nice.
On Netflix, which I've seen twice, but I felt like watching it again.
Mm-hmm.
I watched it with a friend.
Mackenzie? David Mackenzie?
No, Michaud.
Oh, the Australian.
And this movie's awesome because of how, I think, realistic it is in terms of the combat and the fighting. And the movie's terrific and the acting's excellent, but I love this movie specifically for the combat and the stunt work and in terms of, we've seen a lot of movies of medieval fighting, medieval wars, knights in suits of armor. Suits of armor weren't as common as you'd think, but also suits of armor in movies, usually they act like the suit of armor itself isn't a problem for the fighter, the person underneath it, where it really is. And there's a couple of great fights in this movie with suits of armor, and it shows how exhausting it is, how tough it is to kill somebody in a suit of armor. It's really great. So I love the fight scenes in this movie, but also Timothy kills it. Pattinson has a terrific sort of, I wouldn't say it's a cameo because he's in the movie for like 10 minutes. It's a great scene
with
Chalamet.
Yeah.
He's got like an 8-minute scene with Chalamet with this incredible French accent that he does. And people shat on it when it first came out with his accent, but you got to take his perspective. He's doing a French accent from France in a different era, centuries ago, but also as someone who learned English with a French accent. So it's a really unique French accent, but I think it's really terrific.
I've heard that French speakers and French people love his performance, and it's so good because when someone is speaking in an accent, if they're an English native speaker and they're doing an accent, whether it be German or French or Italian or whatever, you never see them struggle with the words, really. They just speak with like as good as an accent as they can, you know what I mean? Whereas Pattinson, because he's so smart as an actor, he's so intelligent, and he understands like what it is to be truthful. He's struggling with what he's saying in English. You know what I mean? Sometimes he's stringing words in and making those pauses. He's like, it looks like he's trying to come up like in his head. He's like, what's the English word? You can see
that's why people don't like the accent, but that's why it's so good.
I think it's the most accurate one for an English speaking person to perform because it looks like he's trying to speak English as opposed to he's an actor who studied the accent and is just reading his lines as best he can with the accent. He's like, he really does feel like someone who's French who's trying to speak English and kind of struggling with it, which was so good.
And this movie has a great production design, great locations, wardrobe. It's all stellar. It's one of my favorite Netflix movies, like a Netflix original, Netflix production.
Joel Edgerton wrote it, right?
Joel Edgerton, did he write it? Hold on, let me check that.
I believe he did.
That's pretty crazy. Oh, yeah, he wrote it with Michaud.
Yeah, and produced it.
Yeah, he produced it. He's also in the film. Also, Lily Rose Depp. Sean Harris is excellent in this film.
Mm-hmm.
Ben Mendelsohn. So it's got a great, great cast. It's an awesome movie. If you've never seen The King, I can't recommend it enough. It's a Timmy role from 2019. He's still like super young in it, but it's one of the movies he did right after Call Me By Your Name.
Yeah.
It's maybe the last time we'll see him with short hair on the sides or like a short haircut.
Well, he just cut his hair.
I know. Wait,
for
was
Bob
that real?
Dylan. For Bob Dylan.
The shaved head?
Shaved head?
No, I thought, yeah. So it's, no, I mean like she has it shaved on the
sides. Yeah, shaved on the sides, yeah.
It starts long, but he has it shaved on the sides.
He's got it pretty short on the sides for the Bob Dylan biopic.
There's an AI image of Timmy with the buzz cut. And it's like taking the internet by storm. I thought that's what you meant. I'm like,
He, they just started filming Bob Dylan and there's some set photos and it's the shortest hair I've seen him have.
Since The King.
Yeah, since The King. It's not, It's shorter on top, but it just doesn't have the buzzcut on the sides, obviously. But it's pretty short for Bob Dylan. All right, next up, I can't wait to see that movie. By the way, Bob Dylan biopic, man.
Hell yeah.
My next watch was actually when we got back from Immaculate. It was still pretty early, so I watched Rocky IV, which came out in 1985, and I wrote 4 stars, and I wrote, I came for the training montages, fights, and 80s music. And man, it did not disappoint. I haven't seen it for a bit, and it's cheesy as hell when people are talking, but the movie works. Russia versus America, the rivalry back then was still very deep in the culture. And Rocky, once again, being the ultimate underdog. There are archetypes and things, story beats that are repeated in the Rocky franchise after the first film. A main character has to die. The villain has to be so insurmountable to defeat that Rocky feels like an underdog. You know, those are like the two main beats that you have to hit. In this film, someone dies. And this film, it seems like Drago is someone who is impossible for Rocky to defeat, especially when they're in that final fight, standing in the ring. Sly is much shorter and much smaller than Dolph Lundgren, and he's just a massive human being. So they do a great job of really, once again, it's the fourth film, not making it feel like Rocky is going to win. And really making you feel like, oh my God, how could he possibly beat this guy? And on top of that, the music for this, the soundtrack made for this movie is great. There's some really fun tracks in this, great 80s music, just ballads, just like, you know, that sweaty hair band, just like, let's go. Training montages are terrific. I love him training in Trans-Siberian wilderness and in the snow, in the little cabin. It's just a lot of fun, and it's one of those just, you know what, don't take it seriously. It's just Rocky versus Goliath once again, and the biggest Goliath he's ever faced. And it's just, they did a great job setting up Drago, putting in the doping, HGH, and really making it feel like this guy is unbeatable. And also with what happens in the first act of the film, it's a terrific movie. Great action movie, great fights. There's only 2 fights in this movie. Yet generally, there's about 3 fights in Rocky sequels. But 2 fights is all you need because the final fight is 20 minutes and it's just absolutely epic. So much fun. And Sly, he actually got a little creative with this one. There's a couple of great sequences of him just like picturing his fear of Drago. Cool little edits, like kind of music video-esque. So he had a little fun creatively with this film that he didn't do before. But it's a really fun Rocky movie for sure.
Hell yeah, man. How many left do you have?
3.
All right, do one more.
Next up, I watched Dial M for Murder, a great Hitchcock movie. Seth, from Seth Reviews Films, he posted his favorite Hitchcock movies, and it just got me in the mood to watch one. And I haven't seen Dial M for a long time. Stars your girl, man.
Yeah, no, Grace.
It's a great film. It's about this man who has plotted to kill his wife, who is played by Grace Kelly. I guess just because he wants her money, he can't stand her anymore.
That's basically it.
However, his plot does not go according to plan. That's all set up for the movie. It's not a spoiler. And so he hires an old acquaintance and blackmails him to kill his wife. And this dude fucks it up. And then the whole film is him, the husband, trying to figure out a way of still not being accused or being held responsible. But also, since I didn't kill her, is there a way for me to get her arrested for my old friend's murder? So it's a really great script. It's the movie that most reminds me of Parasite, of character having a kind of nefarious plan and it going to shit and trying to rebound that. And come up with a new plan. And so it has that unpredictable nature. Terrific screenplay. Mostly, once again, with some other Hitchcock movies, a one-location movie. And actually, it is a one-location movie. I'm trying to think. Yeah, okay. The husband's in one location for literally a minute of screen time. Otherwise, it's in the home. Which is really impressive. Because just watching it the other night, I didn't even think of that. Because it's so engrossing and so well shot, so well photographed and acted, and it just keeps you on the edge of your seat. I didn't even realize it's basically a one-location movie while watching it, but it is. It's a phenomenal screenplay, too. Just such a good story. Highly recommend checking out Dial M for Murder. It's a quick watch, too. It's under 2 hours. It's 105 minutes. Really quick, seething burn. Great acting all around by the entire cast. Phenomenal film.
Heck yeah. All right, my final watch of the week was The Princess Bride.
Princess Bride, nice.
Princess Bride. I really love this movie. I hadn't seen it since I saw it at... Well, we did a watch party, I think, like a year ago, but the year before that, I saw it at an outdoor movie theater screening, outdoor movie screening, which is super fun.
As you wish.
This movie's just, it's just Rob Reiner, the guy knows how to make movies. He's done every kind of genre, really, which is really fascinating. And this movie, it's got such a specific tone. It's got such a specific level of camp that works so well. It's basically the style of humor of the Monty Python series, but dialed a little less, but at times dialed up to 100.
Sure.
So it's this great blend of being a very serious film, but also being very silly at the same time. And great sword work, great fights, great sword work, and great fencing work. This movie's hysterical. It's just a classic. I felt like just watching an old funny movie that I really liked.
It's got some good romance.
It's got a great romance story. Yeah. And Cary Elwes is terrific as the lead character. And I really enjoyed Princess Bride. What?
His name?
What, in the movie?
Yeah.
His name in the movie, Wesley.
Wesley.
And then, hold on, who else is in this?
Robin Wright.
Robin Wright's in this.
Her first film.
This is her first film, that's right. Crazy. Andre the Giant's in it.
She's stunning.
Wallace Shawn, who's in so many movies when we were kids.
He was a big part of the movies we grew up watching. He's in a lot of roles.
He was in a couple, or at least an episode of Are You Afraid of the Dark, I remember, too.
Yeah, you can't mistake that voice, man. That voice.
But The Princess Bride's a classic. It really is. I really love that film. And it's just like sometimes if you need something fun to watch, it's a perfect viewing.
What's your rating of it?
4 stars.
Nice.
4 stars, baby.
Nice, yeah. All right, I have 2 watches left. First up, for our birthday... I watched Top Gun Maverick.
Let's go.
I gave it 5 stars, and I wrote, the best film of 2022. It's great. I watched it on my TV. It was fantastic. I got teary-eyed at the end. The third act, the mission had me all tense and anxiety-ridden. And then I was fist-pumping when it was Tom and Miles Teller behind enemy lines. And it's just so funny. I have it as the best film of 2022 because it's not the best screenplay. It's not the best story. It doesn't have the best acting or characters, but it is flat out just a perfect, finely tuned movie. And just because it's an action movie doesn't mean it can't be the best movie of the year. And for what it is, nobody accomplished their job better than this team did for Top Gun Maverick. It's just an absolute phenomenal experience as a cinema goer. Even at home, the footage, the stunts, the action, it had me breathless and just still floored. And I was screaming out multiple times, let's fucking go. It's just overall beat for beat, such a great film, perfectly structured. It's just the ultimate sequel. And the cast is great, especially the newcomers. John Hamm is a great kind of antagonist figure to Mav. And then, you know, bringing back Val. A bunch of new characters. It's just everything works. It was lightning striking. Jennifer Connelly's phenomenal. I love her in this role. It's got the action. It's got the drama. It's got the stakes. It's got tragedy. It's got romance. Fantastic cinematography. Such a fun tone. Ups and downs. Ebbs and flows. I mean, just him, just Maverick, showing that the mission was possible alone in the desert, and flying that that mission. Digitally, that was one of the most incredible action scenes I've ever seen, and there wasn't even anyone else involved in that scene except for Maverick. Like, that's how powerful that film is. It's just remarkable, and it's just so uplifting, and just an overall incredible experience every time I watch this movie. I adore it. I love it. I have a coffee mug now. I have poster. We have poster in the house. I have a poster behind me. It's just a really wonderful movie, and it's just one of those movies that makes you remember the power of film.
Absolutely, man. Saved Hollywood's butt, that movie.
Saved his butt. It's his buttocks.
It's buttocks. All right, that's all I have for my films and watches. And you're all done now?
I got one more.
Oh, you got one more?
Yeah.
Get into it, man.
Get in there, dog.
Get in there.
Next
get
up,
in there, dog.
Last night I watched Wild Strawberries, which is an Ingmar Bergman film, which came out in 1957. It's basically like if Citizen Kane and A Christmas Carol had a baby. It's Wild Strawberries. It's about a man who is at the end of his life, and he's about to accept a great award for his career as a world-renowned doctor, well-respected. The public loves him. He's revered in his field and the industry. However, unbeknownst to the outside world, he's actually lived a very cold and angry life. And his family and his close friends, they have grown to despise him. And it's him coming to terms with the fact that he's not a good person. He was, and he has flashbacks. He experiences both dreams and visions, visions of the past, and then dreams of the anxiety of death and time running out, and dealing with, and then in his life, in the reality, he's dealing with the fact that the people closest to him, they don't like him. It's not, and they don't even not like him, they despise him, and he's done it all himself. And he's coming to terms with the fact that he's not a good person. And he lived a life filled with regret and grief and mistakes. You know, he's coming to the end of his life, and instead of looking back grateful for his experiences and happy with the relationships he's formed and things he's accomplished, instead, he's only looking back on the mistakes, the regrets, the grievances, and coming to terms with, you know, a life not lived correctly or a life not lived well. And so it's a really great meditation on existence, on life. It's like Ingmar always did. It's got so much existentialism in it, so much metaphorical filmmaking, so many mysteries about it, visual motifs that make you question what the themes are, and really make you dive into what the film's meanings are. It's a complex film, like many of his films were. He never made an easy picture, but in a good way. And oftentimes his films feel like they're just like incredible novels on screen. Just one of the greatest storytellers of all time, really helped expand the language of film and storytelling in the visual medium. He really is one of the all-timers in terms of filmmaking and directing and writing. And this is a great example of that. Check out Wild Strawberries if you want. It's on Max. Max, if you don't know, has a lot of great foreign films and a lot of great classic films in their list. The best way to find them on Max is to just scroll down the drama section, and you'll find all these foreign films.
Heck yeah. They're there if you look. They are there if you look. That wraps our Letterboxd recap this week. Thank you so much to everybody tuning in to Raiders of the Lost Podcast. Don't forget to become a patron at patreon.com/Raiders of the Lost Podcast. Leave those 5-star ratings and reviews on Spotify and Apple. Like I just said, sorry, I repeated myself. And don't
redundancies.
Forget to share us with your family and friends. It's the best way for a podcast to grow. Take care, everybody.
See you next time.
Raiders of the Lost Podcast is a Mirror Image production. Sound mixing done by Jacob Kosler. Opening music by Chase Jackson.